This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 20th day of March, 2009, National Ag Day. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And then later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company, out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, USDA and the IRS are getting together to verify the income of producers collecting farm payments. And the president of Argentina says she'll share revenue from the soybean export tax with the provinces, and that certainly should shore up political support for the contentious tax. And Washington, D.C. wants to know just how much it will cost the U.S. to keep Mexican-tagged big rigs on the south side of the border. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in the program, and it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Public Radio on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled on a Friday afternoon in Chicago. The nearby contracts finished the day like this. May wheat at 5.50 and a quarter, down a nickel on the day. July at 5.62 and a half, down 5 1/4. And September soft red at 5.86 and three quarters, down 5 cents. In Kansas City, the harvest month July at $6.14. For the hard reds, settled 2 3/4 lower. May corn futures were unchanged today to settle at $3.96 and a half. July at $4.07 unchanged. September at $4.16, down a quarter. And December corn futures at $4.28 a bushel, down 1/4 as well. The March 2010 contract at $4.39 1/4 unchanged. May soybean futures up 11.5 cents to finish at $9.52. July at $9.49, up 9. August at 9.32 1/2, 5 1/4 higher. September at 9.05 1/2, up 2 3/4. And November soybeans, a gain today of a half cent at $8.93 on the settlement price. May bean meal at $300.50, up $4.20. May oil 36 cents higher at $32.25. April live cattle 85.20, up 45 cents, and the April lean hogs at $61.75 finished 30 cents higher. Or rather, lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil settled at $51.06 a barrel for the April contract. That was a 55-cent loss for the day. The nearby May gained 3 cents to settle at $52.07 for the crude oil. April ethanol at $1.58.5 unchanged. May futures were just about unchanged as well at $1.59.7 on the day. Natural gas at $4.24.6 6/10 higher. And the April contract, the May at $4.32 3/10, up 8 2/10. April RBOB gasoline at $1.45 6/10, up 1 8/10. Heating oil, that's diesel fuel, 2 6/10 higher at $1.38 2/10. And the propane futures are now trading 70 6/10 of a cent. They're up 4 8/10 of a cent on their settlement price for the day. Gold futures finished at $955.80, down $2.50 today. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 72.75 finished 125 points lower at this hour. Still trading, of course, in the U.S. dollar at 83.84. That's up 0.75 on the afternoon. The CRB index at 226.08 is 0.78 higher for the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like tonight. In northwestern and west central Illinois, increasing cloudiness, a chance of a few showers. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy. Lows will range from 25 in northeastern Indiana to 40 in the west central parts of Illinois. And then tomorrow in western and northern Illinois should be mostly cloudy. A few widely scattered showers. Elsewhere, partly to mostly sunny. Highs tomorrow will range from 50 in northern Indiana to 60 in southern Illinois. The extended forecast says a moderate warming trend will take hold through the weekend and into the middle of next week, although a vigorous cold front is forecast to settle into the region by the middle to late portion of next week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural futures markets and get some analysis on this last trading day of the week. Mike Zuzlo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
When you get a chance, why don't you pull up those cattle on feed numbers? We'll get to those in a moment, but maybe we ought to start with some of the other things that have been happening this week. It's been pretty a raucous week in Chicago, mostly because it's been raucous in Washington. Can you recap what happened for me?
Well, I think, you know, coming off the mark-to-market week last week and the news that some of the federal regulators were going to ease some of the banking standards as far as accounting standards go and push maybe away from mark-to-market or real-time analysis on what assets are valued at and maybe go back towards more of a traditional cost accounting method, that the market was kind of taking a breather off of that this week, and everybody knew that the Fed was coming out Wednesday, but they also knew we were down around that 0 to 0.25% target rate for federal funds rate, and interest rates really weren't going to change that much. But then they dropped the big one on us, and they specifically talked about job losses. They specifically talked about declining equity and housing wealth. They specifically talked about tight credit conditions, all weighing on consumer sentiment and consumer spending, and that those things needed to be dealt with now in a most aggressive manner in order to free up the financial markets, which the credit markets are starting to tighten a little bit. Some of the interest rate spreads are starting to get a little bit nervous again, and the credit is not flowing like it was maybe a month and a half ago. So the Fed is essentially, from an economist standpoint or an economic theory standpoint, they're essentially saying we're going to open the door to greater inflationary pressure by flooding the market with bonds and therefore flooding the market with money supply, and therefore that money supply should be sucked up. And so we're willing to come in and take on the chance of higher inflation, but what we really, really want are lower interest rates and therefore a subsequent increase in exports and a subsequent increase in investment, i.e. the stock market, i.e. the housing and mortgage markets, i.e. easing the credit markets. And so what we find ourselves here at the end of the week is the S&P 500, which was around 755 last week on a close, we're right back to where we were at around 765 from right before Wednesday's announcement with the Fed. So we're only doing about 10 to 11 points better in the S&P futures than we were last week. We're not doing any better than we were before the Fed announcement. And I would probably propose to, you know, the listener that the Fed's goal here is to shock the stock markets higher. Its goal is to lower interest rates. And, in fact, bonds are going down. Real interest rates are starting to come back up again here as we close the end of the week. So probably not the result of what they really wanted.
Well, this is, I would think, terribly bad news in Washington, D.C. to the Obama administration, to Mr. Bernanke, because most have said the chips are all in now. I don't know what else they might be able to do. I don't know what you've seen on the wires that's possible. Where do we stand, do you think?
I think that is a very well said statement. I think that you really have put in everything you can at this point, and now we sit back and see if it sticks, if we get any traction. I think it's very interesting because when we were doing our research after Wednesday, we talked about how what the Fed has done with increasing the money supply tends to push down interest rates. What the Obama administration, with making government bigger and the fiscal balance sheet bigger, tends to do is push up interest rates. It's almost as if, Todd, one side is working against the other right now, and that's something we're working on right now. But I think in between now and when we do get a good, solid opinion on that of why they would be doing that, I think it's safe to say that the world's financial system is still really in trouble, led by the U.S. banks, and I think it goes right back to those toxic assets. We've talked and talked and talked ever since the campaign for president that we would figure out a way to take these toxic assets off the balance sheets of these banks, and we just haven't done it. And my only guess is as to why not is because they're just too doggone big to get your hands around them. And so, like I said to a couple other people today, I really look at it kind of like a blood transfusion because you've got blood poisoning all throughout the financial system, and the new money that the Fed's injecting and all the stimulus that the Obama administration's injecting is equivalent to just giving a complete blood transfusion in the whole financial system to try and bring in the new blood to replenish the poison blood. And it really is an issue where we don't know where it's going to work. And the economic reports, for the most part this week, continue to show very, very, very poor economic outlook until today when the ECRI came out with their leading indicator and said we're starting to find a little bit of a bottom here on the leading economic indicators. But when we saw FedEx profits dropping 75% in the quarter ending, which was February 28th, and continuing unemployment claims through the first week of March at 5.5 million people, that's the highest level since tracking began back in 1967 for that number. So I think the Fed understands completely what's going on. It's just, do they have the policy tools to really shock the market and resuscitate the being back into a healthy marketplace, or is this just going to be a stopgap and we're going to have to slide again later in the year? And again, I would go back to the stock market and the financial markets and the bond markets. If those don't recover here with this and the bonds start to go back lower and the interest rates start to go up in the real market, I would call that a failure of this policy, and I think the market will react accordingly.
On the flip side of this, and you've painted a very bleak picture, on the flip side, in the face of all of this, grains and oil seeds managed to make some gains this week. Beans were up nearly 70 cents, 69.5 and 69 and a quarter in the May and the November contract, week over week, or the lead option in the November contract. And then the corn futures, the May, of course, is the new lead. It was up 25.5 from the settlement of the March last, or 21.5 from the settlement of the March last week, 8 cents on its own. And December was up a dime.
Yeah.
So is this because there's money flowing back into this, what they consider a safer haven?
Yeah. And the word in Chicago Wednesday night was inflation is back with a vengeance, by commodities and by natural resources. And I can understand that because of the injection of the liquidity that the Fed is pushing here. If they get these lower interest rates, and this is key, if you get those lower interest rates and you get that stock market rally and you heal that market up, then you do have a very good shot of taking prices higher in the commodity complex. And so there, it's not bearish. There, it's not a bleak picture. I think what we're really trying to do here is say, when do I need or when do I not need to hedge corn and beans on rallies? When do we get demand back so that I don't have to worry about supply-side rallies giving way to weaker prices, especially after the crop has grown and we're out of the woods on the supply side? When does that happen? And that's really what I'm going after now, is to try and figure out, with the company's help, is to figure out when does demand come back, when does that business cycle bottom, and when can we say aggregate demand is back and we don't need to be as much a hedger right now, or as much a hedger down the road as we do right now. So that's what we're really trying to talk about here. I'm not trying to be super, super bearish, but I go back to the merchandise trade. I go back to the credit markets. When you have 90% of the world trade financed on credit, that's got to affect grain shipments. When you've got year-to-date corn exports and their commitments down 42%, you can't sweep that under a rug. You can't sweep under a rug the wheat commitments are down 23% year-to-date either. So we are getting hit in demand, and the natural resources have some upside potential. But let's look at it from this perspective, too. Let's say you don't have a house. Let's say you don't have stocks. And let's say you're trying to get by, and all of a sudden the Fed comes in with this policy. The stock market may go up. The credit markets may ease. And all of a sudden the wheels start to turn. But in the interim, the Fed policy also generates higher prices in gasoline. And all of a sudden you can't take advantage of the stock market. You don't even have a house to get a refinance on a mortgage, and all of a sudden you're back to paying $3 or $4 a gallon in gasoline. So that's the thing we have to work through here, between supply and the weak demand right now and then demand bottoming.
Well, have you figured out a plan?
Yes, we're going to stick with our game plan that we talked about at the beef house. We're going to be 50% hedged between 435, 450 on the corn, 925 to 960, 50% hedged, combination of puts and cash sales going into the acreage report. Then we've got our overvalue levels a little bit above $5 in Dease corn, around 10.40 in the November beans. We get to those price levels on the market going crazy on inflation data and crazy on the idea that we're back into the 70s-type inflationary pressure. We'll go ahead and get up to three-quarters of the way sold. So the first half of the year, we're going to stick to the game plan of going ahead and getting profit locked in.
All right. And then finally, we better take the cattle up on feed report up just before I let you go. On feed as of March 1 at 95%, placements during February at 98%. Marketing's during February at 95%. The only one that's really very far off of what the average trade guess was placements, and it was within the range, easily within the range. The average guess there was 100.3 placements at 98%. What'd you make of it?
The placement figure well under the average estimate's really nice, and some of the newswire services are calling the cattle slightly higher. Some are saying the feeders could be quite a bit higher on Monday. I think that would go back to how does the stock market close here today. If we end up closing the S&P lower on the week, that may affect the friendliness and the bullishness of this report.
All right. Thanks much.
Thanks, Todd. Have a nice weekend.
Hey, you too. Mike Zuzalos with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on a closing market report that happens on a Friday afternoon.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Don't forget to listen to our weekend program. It's a half hour of a look back at what happened in the marketplace called Commodity Week. We'll post it to our website at willag.org at just about 6 o'clock this evening on a Friday evening. And you can hear it on many radio stations Saturday and over the weekend, but always at willag.org by about 6 o'clock on Friday nights. Dave Dickey's here now. He'll take us through the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, in an effort to combat fraud, everyone receiving USDA farm program payments now will be required to sign a new form allowing the IRS to send income information to USDA for verification or risk being ineligible for program payments. According to USDA, beginning with the current crop year, producers will receive an IRS Form 8821 or a similar form that will authorize the IRS to release tax information to USDA. A Government Accountability Office report last fall found that over a three-year period, more than 2,500 people with income levels above USDA income caps collected more than $49 million in program payments. Argentina President Cristina Fernandez announced yesterday that some revenue from the contentious soy export tax would be shared with provincial governments. At current international prices, the president said the provinces stand to receive $1.775 billion annually in additional funding. Under the new funds administration, soy export taxes will, in effect, become part of Argentina's co-participation tax regime, which transfers 30% of all federal government revenue on value-added income and other federal taxes. As recently as Thursday, protesting farm leaders had tried to introduce a bill to Congress to end the export duties. USDA is assessing the cost of Mexican tariffs on 89 U.S. products, 36 of which are agricultural. The tariffs, which took effect yesterday, are a retaliatory move by Mexico in response to the U.S. decision to cancel a cross-border trucking program. The tariffs affect about $2.4 billion in annual trade. NAFTA normally exempts agricultural products from such duties. The U.S. was required under the North American Free Trade Agreement to grant Mexican trucks full access to its highways by January of 2000, but domestic opposition led U.S. lawmakers to delay the opening until a pilot program allowing some trucks was instituted in 2007. The U.S. ended that program last week. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can listen to this program, and Commodity Week will post it to the website after 6 o'clock this evening. And you can listen to that weekly look at what's happening in the world of agriculture. Or you can sign up to have it delivered as a podcast. If you can't get to the website, you can always visit us on the phone system, 217-333-3434. And don't forget to subscribe to our weekend newsletter. It's a good one and absolutely free.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
On a Friday afternoon, we always talk with Bruce Bostert about the cash grain market. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator in Central Illinois, and it's 10 elevator locations. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Let's start out, I think, at our cash grain segment a couple of weeks ago now, when we talked with you folks over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. All three of our cash grain folks wanted people to lock in an overage if they had it, or at least a very good basis for corn, and then wait it out. Is now the time to make that sale afterwards?
Actually, last Friday was probably the time to make that sale afterwards. We've seen basis levels widen out a little bit since then. Corn, a few cents. We've lost 2-3 cents maybe through the course of the week. Beans have lost a nickel since the 13th, so in the last week. So we've seen the basis widen out some as the board has rallied. The basis has been letting that carry part of the load and backing off. We're starting to see, you know, we're getting to the point where we see some beans, the export market shift down to Brazil. So we've seen some weakening here. There's been some cash movement. We put a fair amount of basis contracts on over the last 30 days.
And your expectations for the next 30 days then?
I think that beans could probably pop back in here sometime. Corn, I think we can still weaken. I guess my guess is that we're going to increase the carryout numbers on the 31st when we come up with a crop report, and I think that we'll see the old crop basis levels continue to widen on corn.
How do you think that at this point end users are faring through all the turmoil in the economy? Are they starting to suffer very much here in the Midwest, and will that slow down demand more than it already has?
It depends on the industry segment out there. Some of the crush margins I've seen, like in ethanol, are as wide as they've been in the last, or as narrow, not much margin in that, as it's been in the last 6 months. So we're not really seeing much expansion there. If one plant comes online, another one drops off. So we've seen some shift there. The feed margins aren't great, so everybody is tend to buying hand-to-mouth.
Okay, and your bids for the day?
We are at 378 on corn and 942 on soybeans.
Bruce, thanks much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostert is the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Friday afternoon. In just 2 minutes, we'll talk with Steve Hilberg. He's the director of NOAA's Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey here in Champaign County.
It's National Agriculture Day. The celebration always occurs on the first day of spring, and it's coordinated by the Agriculture Council of America, whose mission is to share with every American where food and fiber products are produced. National Ag Day also shows appreciation for national farmers and ranchers who are responsible for the supply of food, clothing, and other commodities nationwide and globally. The first National Ag Day was in 1973. It's also National Ravioli Day and St. Cuthbert's Day, patron of shepherds. On this day in agricultural history in 1727, Sir Isaac Newton died. The story, of course, is that an apple falling on his head inspired his theory of universal gravitation. Few think Newton was really hit on the noggin, but rather that he likely came upon the idea of the power of gravity while sitting at the window of his mother's Lincolnshire estate. Newton is reported to have spied an apple falling from a tree while in a contemplative mood. Newton asked himself, why should the apple always descend perpendicular to the ground instead of going sideways or upwards? The apple, by the way, is thought to have been the green-skinned flower of Kent variety. And in 1932, Ilya Ivanovich Ivanov died. Ivanov was a Soviet biologist. While others had previously shown it was possible to artificially inseminate domestic animals, Ivanov developed the practical procedures in 1901. Initially working with horses, by the early 1930s, the procedure was being used on other farm animals as well. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural weather forecast. Steve Hilberg is the director of NOAA's Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey right here in Urbana-Champaign. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's cooler now than it has been, but I think we're going to warm up again fairly quickly.
Yeah, we will. As you mentioned, it's rather cool out. We have a pretty large high-pressure system again over the Lake Huron right now and extending all the way down to the Gulf Coast. And we got some cool air in here, some very light winds. If they're blowing at all, they're out of the northeast or east, which is why it's tending to stay cool. And really about the warmest temperatures we're seeing right now are 54 down in St. Louis, but it's generally in the mid-40s across Illinois. But without a wind and the sunshine, you can be out there in shirt sleeves and not feel too bad. But the air temperature will be climbing this weekend. That high is going to move off to the east, and we're going to get into an increasing southerly flow over the weekend. I'll see probably a little bit more cloudiness in here tomorrow with perhaps some showers starting to get in here tomorrow afternoon and tomorrow night. But I would think if we're going to get any big rain, it's going to tend to be Monday and Tuesday as a fairly strong cold front with this system starts to whip through Missouri, Illinois, and Indiana. So that looks to be our target right now with perhaps the heaviest rain maybe actually falling in the southern half of the state this time around.
Talk to me a little bit about soil and subsoil moisture levels in the Midwest and Illinois.
Well, in general, in Illinois, conditions aren't too bad. We got precipitation across the northern half of the state has been pretty heavy so far in March and was in February. So northern Illinois is actually pretty wet right now. Where there are starting to show some dryness is in the southern part of the state, basically almost bisect the state in half. And south of Interstate 70 is where things are the driest, where soil moisture, at least in the top foot of soil, is probably about 20 to 25% below normal. So we really could use some rain all in the southern Midwest, all the way from central Missouri across Indiana and Ohio. And then in the northern Midwest, we do have some pretty dry conditions now from southeastern Minnesota up through the northern half of Wisconsin. That area has been in drought status now for a couple of months, and it looks like maybe this system might actually bring them some significant rain, too.
And finally, let's close out with some other dry areas around the nation, the southwest and particular parts of Texas and into the hard red. Winter wheat-growing regions have been awfully dry. Is there any relief in sight?
Well, they're not anything too substantial. The central plains and maybe the northern part of the hard red winter wheat belt might get some rain out of this next system, but it looks like we're not going to see any big precipitation producers here over the next week to 10 days. Beyond that, of course, it's hard to say. There's actually some indications of possibly a big system down through Texas and that area, the southern plains, the last week of the month, but that's a long way out.
Thanks much, Steve.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg. Weinberg is the director of NOAA's Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Survey right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You have a great weekend, and be sure to visit our website and listen to Commodity Week at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Kathy Ferguson in Morris at 815-941-3758. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.